Now, Milwaukee Mayor Tom Barrett, Police Chief Ed Flynn, and District Attorney John Chisholm have all urged state lawmakers to strengthen laws surrounding straw purchases of firearms. A straw purchase is when someone buys a gun for someone else who would not be eligible to do so on their own, possibly a convicted felon.
The move comes after a woman was charged Wednesday for providing a gun to her boyfriend who was a convicted felon. The boyfriend used that gun last week to shoot a Milwaukee police officer during alleged burglary. Joining us now to talk about the issue of straw purchases is Stan Stojkovic. He is a criminal justice expert and dean of the Helen Bader School of Social Welfare at UW-Milwaukee. Stan, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Well, let's start off with the consequences right now. So if someone makes one of these straw purchases for a felon right now in Milwaukee County, what happens?
Well, basically, you can be charged with a misdemeanor. That's what the state statute says. So it gives you the opportunity to prosecute individuals. But these cases are very, very difficult to prosecute for a myriad of reasons. And so oftentimes they don't get prosecuted or the charges are reduced. And as a result, the frustrations that you hear from Chief Flynn about people not being prosecuted and ultimately convicted and ultimately serving some jail and or prison time is fairly remote at the current time.
And just to be sure we're all on the same page, tell us exactly what a straw purchase is.
Straw purchase is when an individual goes into a reputable gun dealer. It could be a show. It could be a business in which that person then buys a gun for someone else that they know ultimately is a felon or has a felony record. And what they're doing is they're getting paid by that individual to buy the gun and then ultimately give the gun to this person. Oftentimes, it's very, very difficult for us to prove that nexus or that connection between the individual and the ultimate person who gets the gun. So the straw purchase is illegal under Wisconsin law, also under federal law. So you're basically going in there purchasing a gun for someone that you know should not have a gun under law.
Well, as you said, it's got to be difficult to prove that the person who buys the gun knows that the person they're buying it for is a felon. And any sense of how rare that connection is to be made in court in Milwaukee?
It's very rare. I mean, ultimately, because, again, as you stated, you have to have the proof. And many of these purchases, people will tell you, and we believe them, I didn't know the guy was a felon. They may not have known. You may say, well, that's a little bit suspicious by itself, but that's typically the case. That's more often that's the case than anything else. It's rare that you get an individual to admit that they knew the person was a felon and ultimately still decided to purchase the weapon in violation of the law. And that's what happened in the case recently in Milwaukee.
Stan, as you said, you're there in Milwaukee. How big of a problem are straw purchases there?
Straw purchases are a horrible problem in the city of Milwaukee, but they're a problem nationally as well. If you recall, a few years ago in the city of Milwaukee, we had a gun store that was selling the largest number of straw purchases in the country, and that was problematic for a lot of reasons. The Milwaukee Police Department, cracked down. They were just trying to enforce the law and do what they thought was necessary to get these guns off the street, but it was very, very difficult to do this. It's not only a prosecutorial problem in terms of prosecuting someone for a crime, it's also an investigative problem. How do we find these people? We usually catch them after a commission of a crime, and that's problematic by its very nature. We want to get them before this. We want to get these guns removed. But anybody, a law-abiding citizen who's even interested in promoting gun rights would argue, listen, let's enforce the law. I mean, that's their mantra. Let's enforce the law. But the police chief and the district attorney here in Milwaukee want to go beyond that, I think.
And how would they want to go beyond that? What are they asking for?
Well, they're asking for a felony. Instead of a misdemeanor conviction, that individuals would ultimately face potentially a felony charge. Felony charge means more prison time and or fine. A felony is defined by Wisconsin as something in which a person could go to a prison longer than a year. A misdemeanor is a less serious offense, defined by typically local institutionalization at a jail or a house correction. So they want some teeth to it. I know that Chief Flynn has been adamant about this over the last 2 to 3 years, and he's spoken publicly about this very much so. This latest event here in Milwaukee involved a police officer that, thank God, wasn't killed but got shot and was seriously wounded, or hurt, excuse me, not wounded, but hurt. And so he wants to be able to protect his officers, and he sees this as a mechanism to do that.
So isn't that burden of proof still going to be there? As you said, it's very hard to do, even with the tougher consequences.
Absolutely, because what people fail to realize is that these decisions, while you may have a law in the books, these decisions are affected by multiple decisions. So beginning with arrest, then prosecution, then conviction, then ultimately sentencing. This is a protracted process in the criminal justice system. So it's not a guarantee just because you have enhanced penalties or more severe penalties that you will ultimately get those penalties enforced. Criminal prosecutors oftentimes use the particular cases, if there's multiple defendants, for example, against each other. So they would testify against each other. In return, they'll do a lesser charge. They'll keep it a misdemeanor, for example. Even though the intent of the statute and the actual letter of the statute says a felony, it's a far cry to say just because you have a penalty that you ultimately get that as a disposition.
Well, you've got Mayor Barrett, the District Attorney John Chisholm, and Chief Flynn all asking for that felony charge. And they're also asking that people be required to report lost or stolen guns. Now, how would that change things?
Well, it's hard to say. It may not change anything. It's the willingness of the, you know, the public, the community, and it's certain areas of communities in the city of Milwaukee, certain zip codes that just have a disproportionate number of violent events, violent crimes. Those communities also exhibit multiple problems, from poverty to lack of education to employment issues, and as a result, getting people to comply when they may not comply anyway to just, you know, other kinds of things is very difficult. Now, I'm not here to minimize those communities. What I'm here to say is that these are communities that are in disarray, and oftentimes it's just very, very difficult to get the law enforced.
We're talking with criminal justice expert Stan Stojkovic from UW-Milwaukee, talking about Milwaukee officials calling for changes to gun law there.
You can join the show at 800-642-1234. Do you think the state needs tougher laws to prevent these straw purchases of firearms, these second-party purchases for people who couldn't legally buy guns for themselves? Do you see this as something, no matter which side of gun policy issues you're on, is this something both sides could agree on? Call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234.
We're continuing our conversation now with criminal justice expert Stan Stojkovic about a call from Milwaukee leaders urging state lawmakers to strengthen laws regarding straw purchases of firearms.
Straw purchases is when a second party buys a firearm for someone who legally shouldn't be able to, wouldn't be allowed to. Think a felon in many cases. What do you think? Should these laws change at the state level? Should it go from a misdemeanor to a felony? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234.
And Stan, we haven't gotten into the politics of this yet, but we have to, because politics is a big piece of this picture here. And Milwaukee's DA John Chisholm has said that whenever these gun law changes come up, that the resistance comes from the state capitol there. And I expect the same will probably be true in this case. What do you think, and why is that the case at the current juncture where we are in time?
Well, I think what's going on is the Wisconsin state legislature has been pretty clear in the last 4 to 5 years about gun issues. We've seen carry concealed obviously legitimized under the rubric of state law. Many people were supportive of that. There were obviously critics and people who were not supportive of that. But it's law, and as a result, you have to respond to the law. And I think that right now, gun politics in particular is always very interesting. But, you know, law, the process of creating laws, is an elaborate process, obviously, as it should be. It should be complicated because it's very important. But, you know, we see all sorts of legislation around criminal justice that very, very difficult to get legislators to jump on board. There's a reason why, for example, we don't have, you know, first offense drunk driving in the state of Wisconsin as a crime, because there's powerful influences that don't want that, just like there are powerful influences when it comes to gun legislation. So it's part of a political process. You have to accept that process, and if they want the laws changed, they're going to have to advocate within that process.
We're going to go to our callers now. We've got Brant first up, calling from Bristol. Hi, Brant.
Hello. I about straw purchase, he said, you know, people say, oh, I didn't know he was a felon. Well, why else, or why, what's another valid reason for somebody to have you buy a gun for it? And I'll take your answer off the air. Thanks.
Thanks a lot, Brant. And Stan, what are the other legit? Walk us through some of the scenarios in which this might happen and not be a problem.
Well, an individual will come in, you know, and they may know the person, but they may not know him well enough. You know, they may be a friend. The individual may, you know, convince them for whatever reason. The scenarios are just multiple. And say, listen, I'm just going to do a friend a favor. And, you know, we can all relate to that at one level. But when it comes to buying guns, you would think that people's radar would be up a little bit higher and that they would be concerned about an individual asking them to buy a gun. But there are multiple situations where individuals could ultimately say, listen, I think it's legitimate to buy a gun, or I'll buy a gun for a person just like I'll buy something else. And, you know, it's hard to say with specificity, at least from my experience. These things are all over the place, as you can imagine. In Milwaukee, we know that about 85% of the buys, it's legitimate that the person did not know that the person was a felon. We hope to raise consciousness around these kinds of buys, that individuals, somebody asked you to buy a weapon, that you would know why they wanted that weapon, and you would know their background. But, you know, gun culture is a huge issue in the state of Wisconsin, and a lot of people just think nothing of it.
What do you mean by gun culture?
Well, we're a society, and I think in the state of Wisconsin, where particularly in northern counties, where hunting and fishing and outdoor life is just a way of life. And as a result, individuals, you know, they value their guns. They see their weapons as part of who they are. They see it as a right under the Second Amendment. I can disagree with them about that and that interpretation, but the fact of the matter is, in many, many communities, that gun acceptance culture is a big part of that community. It's a big part of their local economy. And as a result, for them, it's legitimate to have guns in all sorts of contests, because they believe the guns are actually part of who they are. And they know how to handle them, they know how to clean them, they know how to do all the things necessary to keep a gun safe. But that's clearly not true in a huge number of our urban centers across the state.
Go back to our phones now, and thanks to Brant for that call. Next up is Caleb in Milwaukee. Caleb, hi.
Hi, how you doing?
Good, thanks.
I don't agree with the gun show loophole. I believe criminals will buy guns from other criminals. Most people that I see online selling to other buyers will only sell to people who carry concealed permits or who have been looked at. The problem with the gun show loophole is some grandfather wants to pass down his hunting rifle to his grandchild. That gun show loophole that they say would make that grandfather have to bring his grandson to a dealer, be registered on file with the government, which we all know registration leads to confiscation. So,
and Caleb, what about the straw purchase felony change we're talking about?
You know, unfortunately, it's not a perfect system. I don't know much about the felonies, but criminals are going to get guns in their hands any way they can. And that's why they're criminals. They do criminal activities. And even if that means even if one guy turns them down, they're going to find someone else on the street to sell it to them.
Caleb, thanks a lot. And Stan, what do you say to that? Criminals are going to get their hands on guns.
Well, they are. I mean, the fact of the matter is, if you want a gun, particularly in the city of Milwaukee, and you're fearing for your life, actually having a gun might make some sense given the high levels of violence that experience in that community. But I'm not here to advocate necessarily for that, but I can understand why people would arrive at that conclusion. At the end of the day, you have to ask, well, what is the fascination over guns and what's really happening? And of course, that's a difficult conversation. There is no way in this country we will be able to put the genie back in the bottle. There are too many guns out there, legitimate, legal guns out there right now. I disagree with the caller that, you know, registration leads to confiscation. There's no evidence to that effect. But individuals really look at this as really part of who they are. So that's part of the American culture. But I also think that there are ways that we can rationally look at this system. Now, I don't totally agree with the district attorney or the police chief that ratcheting up the sentencing or the punishments would necessarily lead toward more people, you know, being charged, prosecuted, and ultimately going to jail or prison. That would have to go through the process, as I mentioned earlier, and that process is much more elaborate and complicated.
Stan, thanks a lot for joining us.
Absolutely. Have a great day.
You too. And that was Stan Stojkovic, Dean of the Helen Bader School of Social Welfare at UW-Milwaukee, talking about laws regarding straw purchases of firearms.
In the not-too-distant future, next Sunday, A.D.
This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. That's Mystery Science Theater 3000's theme song. The show kicked off almost 40 years ago with the simple premise, a man is trapped on a satellite by an evil genius and he's forced to watch some of the worst movies ever made. He survives by making snarky comments about the movies with the help of his robot friends.
The show became a cult classic, running 11 seasons plus a movie and live shows ever since. And it put movies like Manos, The Hands of Fate, and Deathstalker and the Warriors from Hell in the public imagination.
Two of the stars from the show are performing in Milwaukee tomorrow at 7 Turner Hall and doing some live riffing on a bad movie. The show information is linked on the Central Time Facebook page.
Trace Beaulieu and Frank Conniff join us now. They were both writers and performers on MST3K. Trace was evil genius Dr. Clayton Forrester and the voice of Crow T. Robot, and Frank was TV's Frank. Trace, welcome to Central Time.
Oh, thank you, Rob. I'm a big fan of Central Time.
Really? And Frank, thanks to you as well.
Thank you.
Well, let's start with this show on Friday. Frank, talk us through what happens at the Mads.
At the Mads, which is at Turner Hall Friday night, Trace and I come out and we talk to the audience a bit, and then we riff a short film, and then we riff a feature-length film. Both of these films are of what you would describe as not a particularly high quality in terms of any aspect of filmmaking, and we riff them and make fun of the films just like we did on Mystery Science Theater 3000. So if you're a fan of Mystery Science Theater 3000, you're really going to enjoy this show, believe me.
And Trace, are you in character as Dr. Clayton Forrester and TV's Frank through the whole event?
No, we are in character as ourselves.
Aha.
We don't don all the costuming anymore. It's just too cumbersome. But this is us. We are the writers behind this and the sole people you will see on stage.
And we saw you as the evil geniuses on Mystery Science Theater, you know, coming in and out of the commercials. We heard you, Trace, as Crow. What's your approach to riffing on movies these days? What do you try to take out of it?
Always like to try to point out the foibles that the filmmaker presented to us. We actually have a great deal of affection for these films, so we're not pointing the finger and just making fun and mocking. Well, I guess we're doing that, but we're also in a kind way. We travel with these films and live with them for a long time, and we wouldn't choose them if we didn't like them very much.
Right. We look at it more as a collaboration between ourselves and the film. The filmmaker went through the trouble of making the movie, and then we're adding our commentary onto the film to just create a more entertaining experience than it would be if it was just the film.
And Frank, I don't know if this spoils the show, but can you tell us what the short and the feature are in this event?
I am not at liberty to reveal that at the moment. We like to keep it a surprise,
okay,
for our audiences.
I got to ask.
And we have a repertoire of a few different films and different shorts, so you never know what you're going to see when you come to our show.
I got to ask.
We have such loyal fans that sometimes we'll take a poll in the audience, and if a majority of the fans have seen the films that we've done, we will switch to one that they haven't seen.
Really?
So
you're ready to turn on a dime like that?
We are.
Yes.
That's all we can do is turn on a dime.
For people who lived through the original MST3K era, and a lot of kids grew up watching, you guys were the true faces of evil. Did that ever haunt you in your daily lives? Did you ever have kids or even grown-ups coming up and yelling at you for how mean you were to the guys up on the satellite?
I think they understood why we were being mean, and I think we were more incompetent than true evil.
True.
Frank and I considered running for political office this year.
And are you gonna? Frank and Trace, 2016?
We're just too incompetent for that.
Okay.
Yes.
Now, watching the original show during the movie riffing, what was the process that went into it? Was there a lot of ad lib? Was it completely scripted or somewhere in between, Trace?
It was mainly scripted, almost completely scripted. But there was room for every now and then someone would come up with an ad-lib and throw it in. But all of the ad-libbing happened while we were writing the film. So we wrote and we rewrote and we edited and we tried to make it so that by the time we taped the show to air, we had the best jokes we could come up with.
How did you guys know, let's start with Frank, how did you know when you had a really special movie, a memorably bad one that was going to make for a great addition to the show?
Well, it was hard to tell. I mean, all of the films were, you know, they were all really bad films. So it was hard to tell, you know, what was going to become a memorable episode. There's certain movies like Manos and Hands of Fate that you could tell right off the bat had a very special quality to them. And you kind of knew that it was going to be a really memorable episode. But also, you know, one of our most popular and one of our most iconic episodes is Mitchell with Joe Don Baker.
Yeah.
And that's a detective film and like a 70s cop film. It wasn't even in the genre of the films we usually did, which were horror and sci-fi most of the time. So, you know, so to me, I mean, I always knew that was going to be a really funny episode, but I never would have predicted how it became one of our top all-time favorite, most iconic episodes that people quote all the time and people love.
We're talking to Trace Beaulieu and Frank Conniff of MST3K fame. They're in Milwaukee at Turner Hall a Friday night. I wanted to ask about the following of Mystery Science Theater 3000. Obviously, a huge following, kids, grown-ups, people still love it to this day. Trace, when this started off, did you have any idea that it was going to win people over like this?
Oh, absolutely not. We were so isolated from the audience. When we did the show in Minneapolis at a crummy little television station and then moved out to the suburbs when we got a contract with the channel, we didn't get any feedback, really. And in fact, none of us could watch the show on any of the cable packages that we had. To watch the premiere, we had to go like a couple of towns over and watch it in a bar. This was, you know, the very early days of cable 24-hour comedy.
And Frank, what's it like doing this in front of an audience where you do get that instant feedback that you had none of producing the show?
Well, you know, doing Mystery Science Theater was a great experience, and you know, I couldn't imagine anything better than that. But actually, doing live movie riffing is takes it to a whole other level, and is actually a way more pleasurable experience than doing Mystery Science Theater. To do it in front of an audience and to get the instant feedback of the laughs. It's why we keep doing it. We keep doing it as a live show. Trace and I were with Joel Hodgson and J. Elvis Weinstein and Mary Jo Peel. We did a show called Cinematic Titanic for several years. That was us doing live movie riffing. And that broke up. And Trace and I, when we got the chance to keep doing it as a duo, we jumped at it because we just love doing this kind of show in front of a live audience. It's just one of the great experiences of my career.
I want to ask each of you about a project you're working on now. Trace, I understand you have a Kickstarter going for a new show called Renfest. Can you tell us about that?
Yes, this is going to be a sitcom that takes place at a Renaissance festival. I guess the short pitch would be The Office at a RenFest. We show you the behind-the-scenes, the comings and goings of all the performers, and the politics behind a Renaissance festival.
And is that staying in that affectionate mockery theme that you guys were talking about earlier with the movies?
Oh, absolutely. There's to go in and just say, oh, look, that guy's wearing tights. That's a one-joke, you know, premise, and it doesn't take you too far. We really like that world and like the people and the same approach where, you know, there's a little bit of, naive theatrics and professional organization, and they clash. Mary Jo Peel's character comes into this environment trying to bring authenticity to what is a very chaotic situation.
And then, Frank, you've got the Pod House 90 podcast. This is podcast theater, is that right?
Yeah, they're original radio plays that I write and produce and direct. And I write, they have a big musical element to them. I write the songs with my brother Tony. And, yeah, I've done four so far. I'm working on the fifth one right now. And, yeah, they're just a chance for me to do, original radio plays. And, I'm really, blessed in that I have so many really hilariously, brilliantly talented friends, and they all contribute their talents, and I get great casts for these shows. And Trace has been in one. I've had Eddie Pepitone, Dana Gould, Lorraine Newman, Emo Phillips, all kinds of Julie Klausner, all kinds of really funny people. And it's a great experience for me, and I've gotten nothing but really good feedback for them.
Well, have a great visit to Milwaukee, and I hope you have a great show with a really bad movie. Thanks a lot, guys.
Thanks, Rob.
Thank you. Take care.
That was Trace Beaulieu and Frank Conniff of Mystery Science Theater 3000 fame. They're doing a live show mocking an as yet undisclosed bad movie tomorrow night in Milwaukee at Turner Hall at 7 p.m. There's show info on the Central Time Facebook page.